But you never, have you ever met, a, have you ever talked, you, excuse yes. me, have you ever talked to a Palestinian who said, I want peace with Israel?
Yes. They want freedom.
That's something else. I agree with them.
They want peace and freedom and security.
Fine.
Just like you.
Fine.
Can Jews be oppressors?
Sure. Absolutely.
Should Jews be oppressors?
Of course not.
Because the Jewish people have been oppressed for thousands of years.
Absolutely. That's why we wanted Israel. To get out of Europe, to get out of America, to get out of Asia, where they had pogroms like in Iraq in 1941. Sure. So we don't want to be oppressed. And we try as much as possible not to be oppressors.
And not only are the settlements illegal, the entire occupation, you know, in the words of the ICJ, is illegal. And based on that, Shiloh, this place, has no legal basis. It needs to be demolished.
Have you any other jokes?
All right, new episode with an old guest. Not that you're old, but like a veteran guest of Young and Naive. Who are you?
My name is Yisrael Meidad. Born in America, I moved to Israel in 1970, and here in Shiloh in 1981. So it gives me four decades of experience. I'm now retired, but I still go into Jerusalem to volunteer. I try to think that I'm a little bit of an expert in history, especially Zionist history, political science. I have 2 degrees. And I continue to write for the Jerusalem Post and other newspapers, political columns, publicistica, as we say in Hebrew.
We've known each other for 12 years. I've been interviewing you ever since 2014. We've been back in 2018 here in Palestine. And glad to have you back.
I thank you for having me on. But we happen to be in Judea and Samaria, not Palestine.
According
to me.
But what do you base your opinion on?
Well,
is it the Bible? Or?
Well, not exactly. It's that, I want to make clear, Palestine was the Roman Latin name that was applied to this area. It was always known as to the Jews as Judea. And for example, if you go into the 1947 UN partition plan, so there's a section there on the borders. And when it says you go from here to here, from here to here to here to here, it says Judea and Samaria. It doesn't say Palestine. Palestine was a mandate that existed for 30 years. But we Jews like to call our country by its own name. I don't deny Arabs the right to call it Palestine, but I call it Judea and Samaria.
What did the Egyptians call this area before, you know, the Jews conquered the area? Like 2,000 years ago?
They probably call it Philistine.
Oh. See?
Right.
Sounds like Palestine.
It does. It's the only way that the Arab language can pronounce it because there's no P in Arabic. So it's very odd that a quote-unquote indigenous 5,000-year-old people living in its historic homeland can't pronounce its name.
So how's Shiloh doing? I mean, I said, like, we've been here in 2014. How is the settlement developing, your community?
We're still not at 500 families.
What?
Which would probably be about 150 families more than you knew. But we have another 12, 13 communities surrounding us on the hills and the valley. And the population, if we include Eli, north of us, is about 12,000 Jews in this area, with a good few what they call outposts or farms in the area. So we've expanded, increased our population. I don't know if the Shiloh Winery existed when we last talked, but it's a world-famous winery with hundreds of thousands of bottles going abroad. Other industry here, restaurants now. We have three restaurants.
Any good?
Yes, one is excellent because he was on a, I don't know if you have, I guess you have it in Germany also, a Master Chef type of a program where people come and cook. He almost won the program, so he has a restaurant here.
Can anybody go there?
Yes, anybody. Everybody, anybody.
Germans?
Germans.
Arabs?
That depends on their identification card. If they are Israeli Arabs, they can. Palestinian Arabs from the Palestinian Authority, they'd have a problem because they can't come in because of the security requirements.
What, you're afraid of them?
I don't know if you call it afraid. I'm anxious, and the orders of the government and the IDF are that only with a special permission, for example, they work in construction or something else, they have to go through even a, what we call in Hebrew, Shabak, the security services review before being able to come into the community. This is used to always be. But especially after October 7th, there's a mindset that we saw hundreds, if not thousands, of Arabs of, from Gaza coming into those communities along the Gaza Strip. And they complained. We gave them work. They worked in our fields. They worked in our industry. They even came into our homes, the women, to clean. And look what happened. So there's like a mindset that completely changed.
But your guys' mindset is like, okay, if they are cheap labor, they can come here.
Actually, not even cheap labor anymore. We really don't want, we want to develop Jewish cheap labor.
How do you do that?
How do you do that? You use young kids before they're married. So
child labor, that's illegal.
Well, no, they're 21, 22, 23. That whole security situation since October 7th, 2023, look, a lot of people can say you people out in Judea and Samaria were always security conscious because you're in, quote unquote, outside of Israel in an Arab populated area. But now many, many Israelis have become sort of, I'm not saying they're changing their political mind, but their orientation to the security issue. Can you trust an Arab? Do you have to be fearful of an Arab? Do you have to watch him when he walks down your corridor? That whole mindset has changed very much.
Hey Leute, kurzer Hinweis. Wir stellen ja alles, was wir produzieren, kostenlos ins Netz. Ohne Kommerz. Wir können das nur, weil ihr unsere finanziellen Supporter seid. Das funktioniert seit Jahren und so soll es bleiben. Jeder Euro zählt, per Überweisung oder PayPal. Schaut einfach in die Podcast-Beschreibung und jetzt geht's weiter.
What's the difference to racism? Like, with this mindset, like, because he or she is an Arab, we must be cautious, anxious. Isn't that like the definition of racism?
No. Definition of racism is because of your color or national origin, you cannot be anything else except a thief, a rapist, a murderer, whatever you want to say. Not very intelligent, okay?
Well, I mean, you basically said an Arab is a potential danger.
An Arab who has a Palestinian Authority ID is a potential danger. We have, I think, close to 2 million Arabs in Israel. They work in hospitals. They work all over the place. We have a Supreme Court justice who's an Arab. Yeah. So it's not racist Arab. It's Arab.
Racism against Palestinian Arabs.
No, it's not racism. Right. Again, it's a question of do identify his potential on the basis of past experience of being a problem, a danger, or shall I take special precautions and let him go about his business, but I keep an eye open? Mm-hmm. That's not racism. That's being fearful. When your child is running in the street, you don't say the car is racist if it unfortunately hits him, perhaps, right? So, but you also tell him, don't go into the straight street without looking because there are cars. Mm-hmm. That's a danger. So I hope I've explained myself.
Could a Palestinian Arab or like an Israeli Arab get a house here?
No.
Just for Jews?
Yes.
Then that's not segregation, racism?
No, because when we become a city, perhaps, Arabs will be able to come here.
Oh, okay.
I'm not denying them residency.
You would welcome them?
I would probably welcome those who would want to live here. If they can live in Jerusalem, if they can live in Haifa, right? Haifa has a very large Arab minority. Yeah. No one says they can't live there. And we have Arab cities like Nazareth, where very few Jews live, or Arab villages. Mm-hmm. Maybe 300 Arab villages where no Jews live. Mm-hmm. That's the way this country developed. When we had mixed communities in the Mandate period, Ramla, Lod, Yafo, what happened? There were riots, and Jews were killed when it occurred to the Arabs to say, or the Mufti, or whoever listened to the Mufti, let's now kill Jews. 1920, 21, 29, 36. I understand there's a famous movie now out, pro-Palestine, called 1936, but it doesn't tell the whole story. So we have historical memory of that period. Mm-hmm. Jews were forced out of mixed cities. Jerusalem in 1948, all the Jews had to leave this eastern part of the city, basically, which became Arab, not because we wanted to, not because we were the racists, because they were engaged in ethnic cleansing. They didn't want us there.
Do you have Palestinian Arab friends? Here.
I wouldn't say friends.
Do you know people?
I have some acquaintances. I do know very well someone who lives on the other hill over there.
It's not part of Shiloh, I guess.
Not part of Shiloh.
Not yet.
Not yet. But he bought the land in 19... His father or uncle bought the land in 1928. Because I visited him once and he showed me the deed. Oh. His uncle was in Chicago. And he sent him $25 and he bought the land in 1928. And
can you take it away?
After Oslo, yeah, he was kidnapped twice by the Palestinian Authority, beaten and tortured because he had two friendly relationships with Jews. So now we don't get to speak very often, if at all. It works on both sides of the divide, as we say.
Would you guys love to get the hill?
To get the hill?
Well, I mean, like,
no, he lives there. Let him live there. We're not interested in his hill.
No?
No.
Why not?
Because it's his. He lives there. He's lived there for 100 years. His family's lived there for 100 years. He has crops. Mm-hmm. He has some sheep, and he does some work. He's quiet. He doesn't attack us. He doesn't do anything wrong.
Maybe he's afraid of you guys.
I don't think so, because he used to come in here all the time. That's not the question. I think he's more afraid of Mr. Mahmoud Abbas or Mr. someone else who has done him bad. We haven't done him any bad.
Well, we spent some days already here and talked to some Palestinians in this area. They are afraid of you guys, the settlers. There's been a lot of violence. I mean, you can't deny this. The settler violence has quadrupled in the last 4 years in the West Bank.
I agree that there's a problem. I'm not familiar with all the figures. I do know that what is not reported is that almost every day some act of violence by Arabs against Jews happens. It could be stone throwing. It could be, on occasion, firebombing. It could be a tax on some of the communities that are undefended, what I call the farms of the youngsters. And I would guess that...
But there's also unprovoked attacks by Jewish settlers.
I'm not saying they're unprovoked attacks. There are, unfortunately, about 300 or so youngsters who believe that now is the time to push the Arabs out.
Why don't you guys educate your youngsters not to do this?
We've tried. We've tried.
So you guys did a bad job.
I don't know if we could have done even a good job. It's a sociological, political problem. After the withdrawal from Gaza Strip in 2005, the younger generation, who at that time were teenagers or even younger, said that the Council of Jewish Communities was weak, it surrendered, it gave up. And you have no moral authority to tell us how to run our political campaigns. And that was a break. We lost authority. Rabbis lost authority. Parents lost authority. Educators lost authority. And the police, under various ministers, not only the current minister, have not been successful in catching them or in proving their innocence or their guilt in a fashion in which the court will accept it. And it's a very complicated situation, which makes me personally very unhappy, because I'm looking at it also as a parent. If my child ran away from home, I tried to get him back. If he was engaged in violent activity, destroying property, hitting people, I would try to punish him or bring him back. And I think some of the parents are not authoritative enough or not responsible enough towards the younger generation.
I mean, the Israeli army, the Israeli military, the IDF is responsible for the safety in Judea and Samaria, as you call it.
Thank you.
Shouldn't the IDF, you know, go between, you know, the Palestinians and those young violent settlers and protect, you know?
Absolutely.
But that's not happening either. It's getting worse. Like I've seen video and reports where the IDF stands by.
I'm sure we've seen the same videos. I know that the army has tried to punish soldiers who have stood on the side. I know also that the overwhelming focus of the army is on Arab terror. And so if you attack over here when they're looking over here, it takes some time to get over. It could take 10 minutes. It could take a half an hour. By that time, it's usually over, because I've seen the films. They get 20, 50, 100 kids running down a street, and then they're gone. That takes 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And by the time a report comes in. So we can't get into all the details, but it's a very troubling situation, because we were able to take out the entire Hezbollah leadership in the Dahya. We were able to take out Iranian leadership in their homes, apartments, or the girlfriend's apartments. We can't find who is organizing and who is doing something here. It's disappointing in the least.
It's also horrible to see, like, you know, young settlers putting, like, fields on fire, you know, the crops on fire by the farmers.
I agree with you, but I ask you and whoever's listening to us in the future, there are instances, especially I remember one specific case at Taiba, which is near Ofra to the south of us, in which it was claimed the Jews set fire to the fields. And we found out later that they, Arabs, had set fire to their own fields just to burn away, got out of hand. And they said, oh, let's blame the Jews.
Well, I mean, I've seen video where, you know, young settlers just set on fire. You can almost see it every week.
I can show, if you want me to, I'll send you videos of Arabs setting fire to fields in Jerusalem, even. So it's back and forth. Look, this conflict is not from yesterday or the day before yesterday. Mm-hmm. The conflict, violence, either it started in 1920 in a political sense or even a little bit earlier, okay?
It's a vicious cycle.
Though. It's a vicious cycle. It continues to go on.
How do you end it?
My idea, Mr. Muhammad, Mrs. Fatima, we're here to stay. You'll get a better life if you put down your guns and either become part of Israel or an autonomy or a condominium part of Jordan. Let's work out the details of a diplomatic arrangement.
They want a Palestinian state.
They're not going to get a Palestinian state. They lost that opportunity.
You guys have your own state.
We have our own state, and we agreed to an Arab state, both in 1947, in 1967, even. We said, except for Jerusalem and the Golan Heights, which was then ruled by Syria, everything else is up for grabs. Mm. No. The famous Khartoum Conference of September, 1967. No peace, no negotiations, no recognition of Israel.
Well, the Arab League in 2002, they recognized Israel.
No, they didn't. They did.
I just talked to Ami Ayalon, ex-head of Shin Bet. We talked about it at length.
Ami Ayalon doesn't know what he's talking about. Mm. Sometimes Israeli peaceniks see into things that aren't there. That's my view.
So, like,
I've seen it with Shimon Peres during Oslo. I've seen it with Yossi Beilin in the Madrid conference, where I was in Madrid for the week. So I've seen it up close. I've spoken to these people. I didn't tell our audience I worked in the Knesset for 12 years. So I've spoken to many people on the left. I know them personally. I think I know that they are fooling themselves, and I don't want them to fool anybody else.
Okay, so no Palestinian state, but you would be fine with Palestinian Arabs being part of, you know, Israel.
Or some sort of an arrangement. I don't want to change their religion. I don't want to change their customs, their culture, their language, their Islam, whatever.
So same rights.
Basically the same rights.
Basically?
I don't know if they're going to be able to vote for the Knesset, for example. Maybe 5 years will pass. I'm not going to say that...
I mean, if people live in the same state, if we were, you know, if the both of us would be citizens of the same state, I would want the same rights as you.
Right. And I would want to give you them. I would say, though, listen, for 70 years you've been trying to kill me. Let's not jump into things.
And vice versa.
Fine, but we never started anything. We did not go out first to kill, to injure, to rape, to maim, to firebomb. We did not start the conflict. The conflict, you could say, started because Jews came back to their homeland. Well, that's the basic argument. And unfortunately today, one more point, a lot of the world not only can't even see that historical development of the past 150 years, they completely define it as colonialism, as genocide, as racism, everything like key words to get you all excited when it has nothing to do with the reality. Starvation in Gaza, famine in Gaza, it doesn't exist.
Well, we let this fact speak for itself.
Okay.
But, I mean, Palestinians consider this their homeland as well. They've been here for thousands of years.
I don't disagree. So what I disagree is that it isn't more ancient than the Jews.
Right,
Arabs came here in the 7th century as occupiers, as colonialists, as conquerors from the Saudi Arabia. In 1658, they were knocking on the doors of Vienna. Okay, they came into South France. Okay, when the Moors conquered Spain and then part of Spain.
Oh, you're talking about the Muslims.
Muslims? Are same, they're the same people.
There are Christian Palestinians. I mean, that's if you...
Yes, but they're Arabs. Oh, okay. They also are, right? So you could say maybe even the Christian Arab Palestinians are actually Jews who lived here in the first century, and instead of being Jews, they moved over to Christianity. It's very possible. But that's their problem, not mine.
But you would like the Palestinians to live in Israel, you know, one state, right? Why not the same rights? I mean, after a peace deal, you know, after the conflict ended.
After a certain, I don't know what the proper word is, accommodation, getting used to the situation. It's not going to be overnight.
That's not how it's going to work.
I don't know.
I wouldn't.
After World War II, if I'm not mistaken, there was something called, in English anyway, the denazification program.
Didn't last long, didn't work.
Okay, this time make it work and make it work longer. People who were part of the PLO or the Hamas or the Islamic Jihad, stand online. We'll see how you operate. It might take a year, 2 years, 3 years. I don't know. You're not getting citizenship.
But you're going to punish the millions of other Palestinians.
No. Those people who wanted to make peace with us and were hunted down by the PLO or the Palestinian Authority, they can become citizens immediately.
Same rights.
Same rights. Voting and responsibilities. I don't know if they can go into the army immediately, but there's some sort of national service.
So that's not the same rights.
Nowhere in the world do you get the same rights without the same responsibilities. Okay? I know Europe right now is giving all the rights to people who are even illegal immigrants. And Mr. Trump in America now is having problems with people coming in to give birth and demanding citizenship. So it's a problem.
That's the American Constitution. I mean, you're an American citizen. If you're born on the American soil, you're an American.
That's correct. However, when the Constitution was made, there were very little people in the United States, and a lot more people were still coming, so there was no problem. They didn't think that 500,000 Syrian immigrants would come in over a half a year, or 100,000 South Americans or Central Americans, some of whom belong to gangs, drug cartels gangs, are coming into the country. Once your security is being threatened, yes, you take certain steps that you wouldn't take in an era of peace or confidence. It doesn't work that way. That's life.
So at one point, the conflict comes to an end. We have a peace deal. There's one state. Palestinians become citizens.
They become Arab Israelis.
After a few years, they get the same rights. So yes. There's a few more years of apartheid.
Right. It's not apartheid.
Well, if it's different
you're
laws
using,
for different people.
No, that's not apartheid.
Yeah, that is.
No. In Germany, I don't know all the laws, but I presume a person who's living there 10 years but is not a citizen maybe has different rights because he's not a full citizen.
But once you become a citizen.
Right. That's right. Once you're a citizen, everything changes. What I'm saying is that the period between becoming a citizen and still remaining someone who's under supervision, under observation, whatever you want to call it, that period of transfer from war to peace and agreement and recognition, that's a short period of time, relatively speaking.
But why do you expect, just like put yourself in the shoes of a Palestinian, like why would they accept, like after being, you know, from their point of view, being occupied for decades, not getting their own state, why would you expect them to accept, like, all right, and we're also not going to get the same rights as Jews for a few more years.
Yeah. Right.
Why would they go for that?
Because
no state, no rights.
Because they said we were silly. We weren't smart. We never accepted any of the plans of 1937, 47, 67, the Begin autonomy plan, Yitzhak Rabin, Oslo, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. We never accepted it. We weren't smart enough. So we have to wait a little longer. We want to show them we want to be good neighbors, good citizens. We want to be productive, contributing elements of the society of a state that gives us health, hygiene, industry, science, etc.
Who decides?
Who wants to go to Saudi Arabia and get your hand cut off for thief?
Who decides if they are good citizens?
The law.
So the Jews.
The law of the state. We have Jews, we have Christians, and we have Muslims who are citizens of Israel. Yeah. Right? We have Arab parties in the parliament, in the Knesset. Mm-hmm. It's not only a Jewish question. It's not only a Jewish matter. It's a matter of Israel, the one state, historic homeland of the Jewish people, among 23 Arab states, among 40 Muslim states, among 200 states of the world. One state wants to be where the Jews can develop their religion, their culture, their customs, who they are, their communities, the social elements. That is a right, a natural right, that every human being who belongs to a national group should be able to have.
Have you ever thought about what it would be like to be a Palestinian Arab living in these lands? What would you do if you were, you know, a young Palestinian, seeing, you know, other people taking your land because of their religious convictions? What would you do if you were a Palestinian?
I've tried talking to several of them. I wouldn't say they're 16 to 18, but I understand that in their youthful enthusiasm, they would like to become a freedom fighter, what I call a terrorist. I would think that
be a freedom fighter? Would you fight for freedom?
If other people
take your land?
It depends. If I couldn't get my land back through diplomacy, if I was, excuse me for saying this, mm-hmm. stupid enough to refuse every single diplomatic peaceful offer, and say it all belongs to me. Not only all belongs to me, I don't recognize you and your right even to be in Tel Aviv, which Jews purchased in 1909. There was nothing. There was no Palestinian living there. It was sand dunes. You still don't have the right to be there. I would hope that I would have enough education and common sense to say, wait a second. Maybe I'm in the wrong. Maybe my life could be so much better. I can even continue to live in my village just like my ancestors did. It's just without the Palestinian flag. Maybe what is better, the Palestinian flag or my life today and the life of my children and grandchildren afterwards?
But put yourself in the shoes.
Are you stuck in the past or do you want to look to the future?
Hi. Tyler hier, Producer von Jung und Naiv. Ohne euch gibt's uns nicht. Jeder Euro zählt und ab 20 landet ihr als Produzenten im Abspann auf YouTube. Weiter geht's.
But to look into the future, it would be nice to have hope. And there are a lot of young Palestinians, I know, who don't see, who are not hopeful. They're not hopeful to that there's going to be peace, that, you know, Israel... The Israeli Jews want to make peace, so there's no hope, and because there's no hope, they have nothing to lose, and they turn to violence. Like, if you were a Palestinian, do you understand this?
I understand how wrong they are. Hope has always been there. Arab rejection of any sort of compromise, any sort of arrangement. Mm-hmm. For 90 years or more has been the main problem. Do you want us to be able to live here or not? We gave up Judea and Samaria in 1947.
But if you were a young Palestinian and you understand the world that Jewish settlers don't want you to be here, what would you do? Would you be a freedom fighter?
Again, you're giving me a set of circumstances which I don't agree are the correct circumstances. I would expect that even a young Arab, 17, 18 years old, not even out of high school, would be able to read history books from both sides. The Jewish books, mm-hmm. or books from
You mean the history, Bible? Or?
Not the Bible, the history books. The books written in English, the books written in Arabic that's been translated. And so they say, well, is this true? Is that true? What do my teachers tell me? If my teachers or their teachers tell them only one version of history, there was a initiative here mm-hmm. about 10 years ago mm-hmm. to put out a history book, one page Arab version, the next page Jewish version or Zionist version, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. and then have classes argue which was correct, what were the possibilities. It's done in the Jewish school still in Israel. We get the story. How do I know? Because we have Peace Now. We have this organization. We have B'Tselem, right? On the Arab side, do you have any peace organization? Any organization that says, let's make peace with the Jews? Not one. Not one organization. You have a few individuals, right? Not one. Here in Israel, you probably know we have a dozen or more. And they have demonstrations, and they have activities, and they get money from the EU and Germany included, and they go get prizes from Germany, and they get all sorts of things, Amos Oz and everybody else that goes, Omar Batov, everybody goes out there.
I had the head of B'Tselem on my show.
That's your problem, not mine. Anyway.
It was a great interview. You should watch it. It's in English.
Fine.
We talked about the genocide in Gaza.
That's what I say. It's your problem, not mine. And
right. It's the B'Tselem's opinion.
Right. But you never, have you ever met, a, have you ever talked, you, excuse yes. me, have you ever talked to a Palestinian who said, I want peace with Israel?
Yes. They want freedom.
That's something else. I agree with them.
They want peace and freedom and security.
Fine.
Just like you.
Fine. Do they say, I'm willing to recognize the historic Jewish identity and connection with the land of Israel? Do I reject what it says in the Quran that Jews are, I'm not going to say exactly what. Anybody can open up a Quran and read it. They're not very good people, okay? Am I going to say, well, why did the Mufti go to Berlin in 1941 until 1945? What was he doing radio broadcasting? He identified with the Nazis? Is that a good thing to do? Or how come there's so many Arab dictatorships? Gaddafi, Sadat, Sisi. There's so much war in the Middle East, in the Arab Middle East.
The U.S.
And ISIS, this and that. Why? What's the problem?
Well, it's,
maybe solve that problem, not my problem.
Well, in the West, we say they are our dictators. That's why they are there. Because we get the resources.
But that's not my problem. Or that shouldn't be, let me put it this yes. way. It shouldn't influence whether or not Ahmed Muhammad is going to throw a stone at my car, even though he knows there are children in that car. That's the problem.
But your worldview is based on, you know, the Torah, right?
My worldview is based on experience. I have a fundamental understanding that Jews have lived here for 3,000 or more years. As you know, probably because I maybe said this in the past, yeah. You go down the hill to Tel Shiloh, we have archaeology.
Yeah.
You can Google it,
yeah.
Tel Shiloh.
We talked about it in 2014.
And you can see pottery, jewelry, elements of buildings that existed 2,500 or more years ago.
Right.
So the Bible isn't only a book of religion.
Of history.
Right? It's also a book of history.
Can a good Jew have freedom and safety based on the lack of freedom of others?
Sure. You remind me of something, If Not Now says, or Peter Beinart, if you've heard the name Peter Beinart, right? Jews are not free until the Palestinians are free. Why? Because they refused and rejected for 100 years. I have to suffer because of their non-thinking, their illogic approach to politics.
Can Jews be oppressors?
Sure. Absolutely.
Should Jews be oppressors?
Of course not.
Because the Jewish people have been oppressed for thousands of years.
Absolutely. That's why we wanted Israel. To get out of Europe, to get out of America, to get out of Asia, where they had pogroms like in Iraq in 1941.
Sure.
So we don't want to be oppressed, and we try as much as possible not to be oppressors. There's no other political state, political creation like Israel that has tried for 70 more and more years to make peace with its neighbors, to give back territory. 1957, 1967, 1994, 1981 with Egypt. We have given back land, not promises, not hope. We act something you can touch.
Right.
Arabs have never given us something that's real.
Are you going to give back Gaza? Are you going to give back the South Lebanon? Are you going to give back the Golan Heights? These are areas that the Israeli army is occupying right now?
The short answer, ask Hamas in Gaza, ask Hezbollah in Lebanon.
I ask you as an Israeli.
Ask Julani in Syria.
No, I ask you as an Israeli citizen.
That's my answer. I'm not going to give back something he's going to take from me and use as a terror base. If he disarms Hamas, Hezbollah, etc., if Iran gets out of its Mahdi messianism of Shiite Islam, right, and makes peace, all the ships could go through Hormuz, including Israeli ships. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Okay, I agree with you.
I'm all in favor of freedom and safety for all.
For all, including me.
Who are you voting for in the next election?
I don't know yet, but probably the Likud.
Why? That's Bibi Netanyahu's party.
Bibi Netanyahu's party.
You're a fan of Bibi?
I don't think anybody else has the brains, the experience, the personality. I think it's called finesse, the ability to maneuver as Mr. Netanyahu does on the world stage. Is he the best leader in the world? No. Has he the best personality in the world? No. But neither did Merkel, neither did Starmer, and Trump is another problem, but you can't always get 100% even if you marry someone. You never get 100% of what you want.
Do you not care that he's a corrupt person?
He isn't. Let's put it this way.
He's not corrupt?
He's not corrupt. And the court case, just this last week, the judges told the prosecution, drop the embezzlement, the bribery charge.
Netanyahu hasn't given an interview to an Israeli journalist in 4 years, I learned this week. I talked to the head of the journalism union. Isn't that weird? He mostly talks to American TV now.
He just gave an interview on Channel 14, I think on Wednesday night. Or
That's his propaganda.
That's his propaganda. That's his home base.
I don't call this journalism, I'm sorry.
To be fair. Then fine, but to be fair, a lot of us don't call the other journalists journalists. But especially now, we have a study just came out on the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
Look for it. and the whole issue of the Gazan journalists, quote unquote. So yeah, it's a tough world to live in as a journalist and as a politician. But fine. I've seen him give interviews from press releases, not in depth, not press releases, press conferences. Mm-hmm. He had. But I agree with you. He's not an easy man to get along with.
Has Ben-Gvir and Ben-Gvir and Smotrich mm-hmm. done a good job?
To be honest, they've done a better job than I thought they would do.
Why?
Because they're inexperienced. Government, look, I said before, I worked in the Knesset for 12 yeah. years. I know a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was even an employee of a ministry at once mm-hmm. for 1.5 years. Politics is not only politics, and government is not only government. There's so much involved. People stay in place, the clerks, the officials stay in place for 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. The minister comes along. I don't know if you saw Yes Minister from England mm-hmm. or is translated into German. Very, very funny. Yeah. Abba Ebbin's nephew was the writer, okay. by the way. So it gets a lot of interaction that you fight all the time, especially with Smotrich in the Treasury Department. It's a fight all the time with every single minister and every single bureaucracy. And if you don't have the experience, if you don't have the age or the reputation, mm-hmm. they can run you over.
Would you like them to stay in government after the election? You know, there's going to be some kind of coalition, right?
It's the democratic right if they get elected.
I mean,
I don't practice apartheid against right-wing politicians.
Like, especially, I always get worried when I see reports of Ben-Gvir, you know, inciting some kind of, like there's incitement at the Dome of the Rock.
That's not incitement.
That's not incitement?
No. That's equal rights. You've been asking me all the time about equal rights. Why don't I get equal rights at the Temple Mount? I mean, everybody knows because the Temple Mount,
because
the Dome of the Rock,
because there's
was built on the Temple Mount.
That's true.
But
there's a treaty that...
There's no treaty. There's a status quo.
Exactly.
It's like, two friends going after the same girl. And one says, you know what? You can have her. And then he finds out he can't have her. Mm-hmm. If you don't keep to the status quo, if you keep on building mosques underground, if you keep on attacking Jews at the Western Wall outside when you get very angry, throwing stones at them, okay? That's not the status quo. Status quo should be like in Hebron. The cave of the patriarch is divided between Jews and Arabs, okay? And on 10 days of the year, the Muslims get the entire building. On 10 days of the year, Jews get the entire building. On the rest, it's divided. Mm-hmm. You can't do that with the Temple Mount. Different times, different places. Jews have to pray up until recently, very recently, in secret. That's not democracy. That's not culture. That's not progress. That's oppression of Jews.
I'm just worried that this could lead to some kind of new intifada or something, because it's a holy place for Muslims.
I'm sure it can, but why is it saying, oh, they're going to hit me so I don't look at them? I walk down the street. I don't look at them. Why? If I look at him, I don't know if you've been in New York in some certain neighborhoods, if you look like this at someone, he's going to hit you. Mm-hmm. But I didn't do anything to you. I didn't say, you looked at me. We know how people act. I don't want that happening.
Finally, exactly 2 years ago, the ICJ, International Court of Justice, published an advisory opinion because the United Nations Parliament asked them to rule on the occupation mm-hmm. of Palestine. And not only are the settlements illegal, the entire occupation, in the words of the ICJ, is illegal. And based on that, Shiloh, this place, has no has no legal basis. It needs to be demolished.
Have you any other jokes?
I'm just quoting the highest court in the world.
And I don't think
Shiloh needs to go.
And I think that's one of the lowest courts in the world. You cannot take away from the Jews their natural right, their historic right, and their international legal right, which was set by the San Remo Treaty Conference in 1920 and the League of Nations in 1922 to reconstitute the Jewish homeland in their historic land. If afterwards everybody said, oh, let's go hate the Jews, that doesn't change that opinion for me.
Should Jews follow the law?
Depends what the law is. If it's made by someone who fooled around with his secretaries, like whatever that guy's name was, and now he's off the case.
International law was made by all the nations.
No, international law is made by international law professors. Most of them are either Marxists, progressives, or liberals who do not accept that the Jews are a nation. Once you start off from that basis, of course, what we're doing here is illegal.
I'm sure there are a lot of Jewish scholars who participated in international law, who made international law.
Can I let you in a secret?
Please do.
Jews can be their worst enemies, their own worst enemies.
But back to the fate of Shiloh. I mean, it basically means there can't be any new houses, no new infrastructure, and this place, I mean, as nice as it looks, needs to be demolished. Where are you going to go? Where are you going to move to in Israel?
A, I'm not moving anywhere, and I think I might have said this to you on our previous programs. Come back in a few years, and I'll still be here, hopefully, until the age of 120. As we say in Jewish.
I mean, hopefully we're going to meet again, but there's, like, for you, there's no way you're going to leave this place.
No.
Like, the IDF will have to shoot you or something. Because, like, the IDF will be responsible for...
I hope they won't have to shoot me. They might have to drag me. My parents are buried down the hill. Okay? I expect to be buried there. So, and based on the experience of the last 45 years that I've been living here, I don't think that will happen.
Yisrael, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This was interesting, as always.
I hope so.
And please, let's meet again.
We will.
Bye.